Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama daf Mem Tes. We are holding at the beginning of the Mishnah on the bottom of Mem Ches Amud Beis. The Gemara in Amud Aleph is mostly going to discuss various cases of Dmei Vlados, how much you have to pay for Dmei Vlados, and how we assess that payment. And then the Gemara in Amud Beis is going to continue that discussion a little bit, and then it's going to have some discussions about Machzik B'Nechse Ager, about trying to acquire the property of a convert, because that is a discussion at the end of the Mishnah. And if we get there, the Mishnah at the bottom of Mem Tes Amud Beis, we'll discuss various dinim of bor, birshas hayachid, birshas harabim, etc. So the Mishnah begins, shor shayo miskavin lachavera. If a shor, if an ox was trying to hit a person or potentially a different shor, but someone other than a woman, v'hika es aisha v'yatsu yeladea, but accidentally a woman who was pregnant was hurt in the process and her vlados came out, she miscarried because of the injury of this shor, pater min mei vlados. In such a case, an ox is exempt from paying Dmei Vlados. Earlier, we had seen that a shor is going to be pater from paying Dmei Vlados either way, whether it was miskavin lachavera or miskavin laisha, because ubala shor naki, naki min Dmei Vlados. So the Gemara is going to address why the Mishnah specifically said shor shahaya miskavin lachavera, if seemingly this would be true, even by shor shahaya miskavin laisha. But adam shahaya miskavin lachavera, vehika es aisha v'yatsu yaladea, mishalom Dmei Vlados. But if a person was miskavin lachavera, had intent to injure his friend, but nonetheless accidentally hit the woman and her vlados came out, he would have to pay Dmei Vlados, because that's exactly what the Pasuk describes, as we'll see in the Gemara. The Pasuk, Lechina Tzu Anashim Yachtav, is referring to a person who's miskavin lachavera, who intends to hurt his friend and accidentally causes damage to the pregnant woman. So Ketzad Mishalom Dmei Vlados, ask the Mishnah, how do you pay for the Dmei Vlados? So says the Mishnah, Shamin es aisha kama hi yafa ad shelo yalda v'kama hi yafa mi she yalda. We assess the value of the woman, we assess how much she's worth before she gives birth, and how much she's worth after she gives birth. We're assuming it's going to be higher before she gives birth than after, so you would have to pay for the difference which you caused by causing her to miscarry.
That's actuarially figured out. I mean, they know the values of a general woman. It's not, I mean, how do they value her?
Yeah. No, so I think we had experts.
But that's a slave.
Right, how she would be sold as a slave. But even, right, but even had that, how do you value that? So we had experts who were trained in valuing how much people would be sold as slaves, and we would go based on that value. But it's a little bit of a question if it's really true that a woman is worth more before she gives birth than after. That's really Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's question. Amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, imkein misha isha yoledes mishabachas. According to you, and the Gemara is going to have to clarify what this means, it sounds like when a woman gives birth, she's worth more afterwards. So the Gemara is going to say, what is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel saying? The Tanakhama seemed to clearly have said that she's worth more before than after, and that's why you pay the difference. So what does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel mean when he says, Imkein misha isha yoleda mashbachas, that according to you, Tanakhama, a woman is worth more after? It sounds like Tanakhama clearly just said she's worth less after. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel nonetheless disagrees and says, Ela shamin et avlados kamehen yafin benotein labal. Says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, we don't have to assess how much the woman is worth before and after. That calculation would not make sense. Rather, all we have to assess is how much the vlados are worth. And since you caused the vlados to become worth nothing, you caused the woman to miscarry, you just have to pay for the value of the vlados, very simply. And the payment goes to the Baal. How do we know that the payment goes to the Baal? Says Rashi, Sha Torah ziftalo tichtiv Baal ha'isha. Because the Torah grants the rights to this money to the husband. Explicitly, the Torah tells us that you have to pay the Baal. And if the woman does not have a baal, if she doesn't have a husband, then you would pay the husband's yorshim, the husband's heirs. Haita shifcha v'nishtachara o giores pater. And let's say this woman was either a shifcha and she was freed, or she was a convert, so you would not have to pay the dmei vlados. Now the question is, why should you not have to pay the dmei vlados? So Rashi explains here, kolomar haita mishuchares o giores nesua lager. If the woman was freed from slavery, or she was a convert and she had been married to a convert himself, or to an Eved Meshuchrar, to a slave who had become freed from slavery, and then Rashi's adding a little bit to the Mishnah, and she no longer has that husband because he died, then the person would be Pater. So it makes sense. We had said, if the husband is alive, you pay to the husband. If the husband is no longer alive, you pay to his heirs. But in the case of the husband either being a ger or an eved, he doesn't have any heirs. So if he dies, then you just get off the hook. We're going to see some debate about this in Gemara. But it sounds like if the husband is no longer living and there are no heirs, then you don't have to pay the woman. You just get off the hook completely. So says the Gemara, going back to the first case of Shor Shai Miskavin L'Chavero, Taima de Miskavin L'Chavero, HaMiskavin L'Isha, Mishalim Dmei Vlados. The Mishnah, which discusses a shor which was Miskavin L'Chavero, which had intent to hit a different person or a different shor, but not the woman, it sounds like that's the only reason that you're Pater Midmei Vlados, but if you had direct intent to injure the woman, it sounds like you would pay Dmei Vlados. So Leman Te'avit Yitiyuvta de Rav Adi Bar Ava, this seems to refute what we had seen earlier from Rav Adi Bar Ava. The Amar Rav Adi Bar Ava, Shvarim Shenisgavnu Le'isha, Pturim Midmei Vlados. Rav Adi Bar Ava said explicitly that if oxen have intent to injure a woman, that they would still be Pater Midmei Vlados. So why would the Mishnah say, if they're Miskavin L'Chavero, they're Pater, implying that if they're Miskavin L'Isha, they'd be Chayav, if according to Rav Adi Bar Ava, even Miskavin L'Isha, you're still exempt. So Amar Lecha Rav Adi Bar Ava, who adin da'afilu niskavnu le'ishna, nami p'turim midmei vlados. Rav Adi Bar Ava, who holds that even if the oxen have intent to injure the woman, they would still be pater, would tell you that even according to the Mishnah, which said, shor shai miskavnu l'chavero, it would also be true in a case of niskavnu le'isha, that even if the oxen had intent to injure the woman, they would still be pater midmei vlados. V'ha diktani shor shai miskavnu l'chavero, and the fact that the Mishnah taught shor shai miskavnu l'chavero, or that which the Mishnah taught that, Aidi the Kabbalah mini Seifa Adam Shahaya Miskavin L'Chavero is only because the Seifa of the Mishnah, the end of the Mishnah, which is discussing a person, has to teach a case of Miskavin L'Chavero. Why? The Hachi Ksiv Kra, because that's exactly what the Pasuk discusses, as we had mentioned before. Rashi again here says, the Hachi Ksiv Kra Ki Natsu Anashim, when people are fighting, Alma B'Miskavin L'Chavero Mishtai, clearly discussing a case where the person intends to hit his friend. So Katani Reisha Nami Shor Shaya Miskavin L'Chavero. And therefore the Reisha also taught a case of a Shor Shaya Miskavin L'Chavero where the ox intended to injure a person, not to injure the woman, just to have parallel structure in the Mishnah between the cases of Shor and the case of Adam. But we should not be medayik from here that if the Shor was Miskavin L'Isha, he'd be Chayvin Ve'Lodos, really he would still be Pater Midmei Vlados. Amar of Papa, Shor Shenagach Etz HaShifcha Ve'Yatzu Yeladea Mishalom Midmei Vlados. Says Rav Papa, if a shor gores a shifcha, he gores a pregnant woman who is herself a slave, a maidservant, and the vlados come out, she miscarries because of it, here the shor has to pay dmei vlados. Why is that? We just said he's pater midmei vlados. The shor is pater midmei vlados, whether it's miskavin l'chavero or miskavin l'isha. So ask the Gemara my time, huh? Because chamarta ma'abarta ba'alma hu da'azik, what the shor has injured, what the shor has gored, is not really considered to be a pregnant woman, but we really view it as chamarta ma'abarta be'alma hu da'azik, that he injured a pregnant donkey. Why is that? The Amar Kra, shivu lachem po im ha'chamor, because the Pasuk says, in the context of the Akedah, where Avram and Yitzchak were together with Eliezer, the slave of Avraham, who was a Knani and two other messengers, right? Shivu lachem po im ha'chamor, that you guys should stay here with the donkey. And from this, Chazal Darshan, am hadome lachamor. Chazal Darshan, that the Knani nation is considered similar to a donkey. So when it comes to a shor goring a Knani maidservant, it's not considered as if he's injured a woman who's pregnant, but technically it's considered, at least a little bit, as if he has injured a pregnant donkey, and thus he would have to pay for the mevlados in such a case. So a case of a shor who's goring a shifcha is different from a normal case of a shor goring
a woman. Was Eliezer included in this limud, amatem lechamor?
Meaning Eliezer himself was Yidom al-Lachamor?
Was he included in that? Seemingly, yes.
Seemingly, yes. I have your opinion, Rashi. This is quoting from Yevamos and Samach Beis of an Aleph. So right. Rashi there says...
He had a yeshiva.
What's that?
He was a Rosh Hashiva.
He was a Rosh Hashiva, right. Well, so Rashi says here, quoting from Yevamos again, Shivu lachem po, Eliezer Eved Avram Hava. So the Torah was explicitly referring to Eliezer Eved Avram when Avram says Shivu lachem po. And nonetheless, we have the drasha of Amadom al-Lachamor. So it sounds like he was also... Including this limud, but like you're saying, he's a Rosh Hashiva. Because I also tell us that Damesek Eliezer, that which Eliezer is referred to having come from Damascus, is Dole Umashka Matoris Rabo L'Acherim, that he draws from the well of Avram's Torah and spreads that to other people. So how you reconcile that with Hadom al-Chamor, definitely interesting. I'll just mention Derech Agav, a Chavrusa of mine and myself as well. We one time, I don't know, wanted to suggest that maybe the drasha is not really am hadom elachamor. Maybe it would make sense im hadom elachamor. So the assumption of the Olam HaYeshivos is that it's am hadom elachamor. Obviously, we don't really have punctuation.
What would im hadom elachamor mean?
Well, because there are multiple people in the context. So im hadom elachamor.
With those. As you only with those.
Right.
With the others, in other words.
Right. The others are, right. are considered Dome Lachamor, maybe that would be the same limud, but definitely the Masor is that it's Am HaDome Lachamor. Fine. So now continues the Mishnah, or the Gemara discussing the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said, Ketzer Mishlam Dmei Vlados, how do we assess the payment for the Dmei Vlados? So says the Gemara, Dmei Vlados, and I have a gears to change from the Bach here, Dmei Vlados Ushvach Vlados Mi Bayaleh. Why is the Mishnah only discussing how you pay for the Dmei Vlados? You really need to pay for both the Dmei Vlados and the Shvach Vlados. Right? Rashi says, Shvach Vlados, that v'yesh b'chal shum mazu Dmei Vlados, uv'mash ha'isha nires meshubachas, u'balas evarim, bnei ha'ubar v'damei ha'yakarin. Included in the payment for the Vlados is not just the value of the Vlados, but there's also the increased value of the woman because she looks bigger, she looks, she has more limbs, more substantial, so seemingly there's value with the woman as well, separate from the vlados, that's shvach vlados, which is also lost when she miscarries because of this injury. So answers the Gemara, hakanami kamar. Yeah, we really meant to include both the dmei vlados and the shvach vlados. Ketzon meshalim dmei vlados u'shvach vlados. How do we pay for both of them? Shaman seisha kamei yofa shelo yalda v'kamei yofa misha yalda. In order to assess both of those payments, dmei vlados and shvach vlados, we assess how much the woman was worth before she gave birth and how much she was worth after she gave birth.
And then you have to divvy up the Dmei Vlados from the Shvach Vlados.
Right. So the Gemara is going to elaborate more on how we separate those in the ensuing sugyas. So now says the Gemara, quoting from the Mishnah, where Rav Shmuel Gamliel had disagreed with the Tanna Kamma, right? Rav Shmuel Gamliel said, Im kein misha isha yoledas mashbachas. According to you, Tanna Kamma, it sounds like a woman is worth more after she gives birth than before she gives birth. And we said that doesn't make sense because Tanna Kamma said clearly that they're worth more before than after. So that's exactly the Gemara's question. My Kamar, what is Rabbi Shmuel Gamliel saying? Let's see Rashi. My Kamar, Dimashma Dahachi Kamarle. It sounds like Rabbi Shmuel Gamliel is saying to the Tanna Kamma as follows. Di'im kein l'didach islecha dimisha isha yoledes mashbachas. It sounds like according to you, Tanna Kamma, a woman is worth more after she gives birth than she is before she gives birth. But Tanna Kamma ha'ka'amar demivchasa. But Tanna Kamma clearly said she goes down in value after she gives birth. So what is Rabbi Shmuel Gamliel saying? So answers the Gemara, Amar Rabba, Hachi Kamar, V'chi Isha Mishabachas Kodem Shetelet Yoter Mila'achar Shetelet? Is it really true that a woman is worth more before she gives birth than after she gives birth, which now is consistent with what Tanna Kamma says? V'halo Isha Mishabachas La'achar Shetelet Yoter Mikodem Shetelet? No, a woman is really worth more after she gives birth than she is before she gives birth. Ella Shamanes Avlados V'notnin Labal. So rather, what we do is we assess the value of the vlados, we assess the value of the fetuses, and you pay that to the Baal. So now everything works out clearly. It sounded like Rabbi Shmuel Gamliel totally misunderstood what Tanna Kamma was saying, but the way Rabbi rereads it is that he's really referring to his own opinion, that according to him, the Isha is worth more after she gives birth than she is before she gives birth. And he was coming to be cholik on the Tanna Kamma and saying, according to you, are you really correct that she's worth more before than she is after? I totally disagree. She's worth more after than she is before. And that's why we have to just assess the value of the vlados.
Because
then you pay that.
She's out of danger.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right, Rashi says,
Yeah,
I'm just trying to find the exact line. Right, according to what Tanna Kamma had been saying, Rav Shmuel Gamliel really thinks that you wouldn't have to pay her anything because she becomes worth more than she is after. Tanina Mihalchi, we have a brisa substantiating that read of Rabba within Rav Shmuel Gamliel. Is a woman really worth more before she gives birth than she is after? That can't be true. A woman has to be worth more after she gives birth than she is before she gives birth. So we just assess the value of the vlados and you pay that to the Baal. So that was the first explanation for how we read Rav Shmuel Gamliel. Now Rava has a different understanding. Rava amar hachi katani. V'chi isha lemi sheyoledet mishabachas. According to Rava, what Rav Shmuel Gamliel was saying was, does a woman only go up in value because of the pregnancy and only to the person who owns her, meaning only to her husband, and she has no rights in any of the shvach vlados? Ella shamin et havlados v'notnin labal, v'shevach vlados cholken. Rather, what we do is we assess the value of the vlados and we pay that to the Baal. But we also assess the shvach vlados, that which she increases in value because of the growth from the pregnancy, and that they're cholik, that they divide between the two of them, which makes a lot of sense. I think it's connected to the sugya that we had seen a couple days ago on Mem Zayin and Aleph. The Gemara had a discussion about a para by a shor shenagach es hapara, where we assume the para has extra value because of the size of the pregnancy and the volume that she increases because of it. So the Gemara there had a machlokas, whether the nafcha, whether that which she looks bigger because of the extra volume is value that's given to the owner of the para, or it's split, and the Gemara had concluded there that it's split. So here too, it makes sense that the extra value of the woman, because of this, because of shpach lados, would be split between the Baal and the Isha. So according to Rava, that's what Rav Shmuel is really trying to say, but there's another payment involved here. The Gemara had clarified before that we also have to pay shpach lados. But what Rav Shmuel was bothered by is the fact that we're not going to give any of the shpach lados to the Isha, according to the Tanakhama. So Rav Shmuel is coming to disagree and to say that we need to split up the shpach lados between the Isha and the Baal. And we also have a brisa substantiating Rava's read, just like we had for Rava. Tani nami hachi, amar Rav Shmuel, v'chi Isha l'misha yoledet mishabachas, v'ein le'atma b'shevach lados klum. Does a woman only go up in value to her husband, but she doesn't share in any of that increased value of the shpach lados? Ella shamin nezek b'pnei atmo v'tsar b'pnei atmo. Rather, what we do is we have to appraise the nezek payment independently. We have to appraise the tsar payment independently. We have to appraise the vlados independently, and we give that payment to the baal. And we have to appraise the shvach vlados independently, and that payment is split between the woman and the husband. Right? And that clearly substantiates Rava's read of Rav Shmuel, that the shvach vlados would be split between the husband and the woman. But now the Gemara just points out, Kasha the Rabbi Shingamliel, Ad Rabbi Shingamliel. According to Rava, it sounds like, according to Rabbi Shingamliel, the woman is actually worth more before she gives birth than she is after. Only Rabba had disagreed and said that, according to Rabbi Shingamliel, he's coming to argue on the Tanakhama, who said she's worth more before, and he's coming to say that she's worth before, worth more after. But we have two Tanin Amihachis, one supporting Rabba and one supporting Rava, and they both quote Rabbi Shingamliel by name. So that poses a stira within Rabbi Shmuel, because now the first brisa, which substantiated Rabba, makes it sound like she's worth more after she gives birth. And the second brisa, which substantiated Rava, makes it sound like she's worth more before. Let's see Rashi. Kasha de Rabbi Shmuel, Ad Rabbi Shmuel. Dehacha katani v'shvach vlados cholken. Alma isha mishabachas nimachar kshihara yoter mireikanis. According to the second brisa, it sounds like a woman is worth more before she gives birth, when she's still pregnant, then she's worth when she's empty, when she no longer is pregnant. Ule'el katani isha mishabachas mishateled yoter mikodem lachen. And earlier we had a brisa within Rav Shmuel, which said that a woman is worth more after she gives birth than she is before. So how do we resolve this contradiction? So answers the Gemara, lo kasha kan b'mevakeres, kan b'she'in mevakeres. The two brisas were referring to two different types of women. One brisa was referring to a woman who's giving birth for the first time. And in such a case, she's worth less before she gives birth than she is after. So that would be the first brisa. Why is it that she's worth less before she gives birth than after, when she's giving birth to the firstborn? Says Rashi, b'mevakeres, d'amea p'chuten kodem leida mila achar leida, v'misukenesi. Before the womb has been opened, before she's given birth a first time, she's very much endangered. Obviously, we assume childbirth is always a little bit of a sakana, but it's a particular sakana when it comes to the first child. But the second brisa, which assumed that she'd be worth more before giving birth than after, even within Rav Shmuel, was assuming that she's giving birth for not the first time, for a second time, or more than a second time, in which case she'd actually be worth more before than after. The Rabbanan de Amri Shvach Vlados Nami Labal, my time. So according to Rava, Rav Shmuel was coming to argue and to say that the Shvach Vlados have to be split between the Baal and the Isha, and not to the Baal alone. So the Gemara asks, according to the Tanakhama then, within Rava, who assume that the Shvach Vlados also go to the Baal alone, what's the reason for that? So answers the Gemara, Kedetan, or there's gears to change to Kedetanya, either from a Mishnah or from a Braisa, based on the following source. Mimashma shenemar biyatsu yiladea, eni yodea shihara. The Pasuk refers to the woman miscarrying. So from the fact that the Pasuk says that her fetuses, her children, literally, come out, isn't it obvious that she's pregnant? So ma tama lomar hara. What do I learn from the fact that the Torah tells me that she's pregnant? Lomar lecha shvach herayon lebaal. The fact that the Torah uses the word hara is to tell you that the shvach herayon, that the shvach vlados, the value that the woman appraises because of the extra, increases because of the extra volume, goes to the baal, just like the other payments, as Rashi had said before, because the pasuk says baal haisha. So that's the source for the Rabbanan saying that all of the shvach vlados go to the husband and the woman doesn't get any of it. But according to Rabbi Shingam Liel, who assumes that the husband and the woman split the shvach vlados, what does he use this pasuk of hara for? He uses it for the following limud. Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov omer, le'olam eino chayav ad sheyakena keneged beis haherayon. Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov says, you're never going to be chayav unless you hit the woman directly against the womb, against the stomach. It has to be somewhere in that area. But if you don't hit her keneged beis haherayon, let's say you hit her, I don't know, in the head, and something were to, God forbid, happen, then you would not be chayav. Amar of Papa, Lotema Keneged Beis Harayon Mamish, Rav Papa now just qualifies this limud within Rav Lazar ben Yaakov. Don't say that you're only going to be chayev if you hit directly against the Beis Harayon Mamish. Ela kol hecha desalik beis shichma levad, la'afuke yad v'regel delo. Rather, you're going to be obligated anytime you hit her in a place where heat goes to the vlad, where the vlad gains in some way from the pregnancy. Let's see, Rashi, shichma chamimus, behainu keneged kol achalo kulo, that the vlad is gaining some warmth from the woman in the place that you hit her. Rashi says that's like keneged the entire area, but not if you were to hit her in the yad v'rego, if you were to hit her in the hand or in the leg, that's not a place where the vlad gets this warmth or this heat. So in such a case, you would be pater, but it's not that you have to hit her directly against the Beis HaRechem, even if you were to hit her in some other place, as long as it's a place where the vlad gets chamimus. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to move on to discuss the case in the Mishnah where a person injures a woman who was either a freed slave or a convert. Haita shivcha b'nishtachara ogiyores pater. We had said that you would not have to pay the dmei vlados in such a case. And Rashi explained that we're dealing with a case where the husband died. Presumably the husband has no yorshim because he was a convert and doesn't have any family relations. And thus, you just get off the hook. You're pater, you don't have to pay. So Rabba now qualifies this statement. Amar Rabba, lo shanu el shechavo b'b'chaya hager u'meis hager. It's only true that you're pater if you injure the woman during the life of her husband, the convert, and the convert dies. Dekevan dechavo b'b'chaya hager, zacha b'hu ger. Because since you injured the woman during the life of her husband, the convert was zocha in the dmei vlados, baal ha'isha, the husband gets the payment, v'keivan d'meis hager, zocha b'hu min hager. And when the ger subsequently dies, you're zocha in the dmei vlados from the ger directly, because we assume the property of a ger when he dies is basically hefker and kol hakodim ba zocha ba. And since you never paid it, you're obviously the first person to grab onto this payment. Aval chava ba la'achar mitas hager, but if you injured the woman after the death of the convert, then we assume that the woman is zocha in the shvach vlados, and you would have, or the mei vlados, and you would have to pay the woman, and you can't just be zocha min hafker, because at the time that you injured her, her husband wasn't alive anyway, so her husband never got it, and you can't then be zocha from him.
What would be the case if a husband, regular Yisrael and Abbas Yisrael, who divorced his wife, divorced his pregnant wife, and then an accident happened?
So we had seen that case a little bit earlier before, and the Gemara is going to bring it again in a second. It's going to have two ways to read it. One way, the pashtas, I think, would be, at least according to Rabba. Rabba says that the woman does get payment in such a case, so he would say even in the case where you were divorced, then you also, the woman, get the payment. Even by a regular
so here Israel. Too. So he would, Rabba would say that here too, she would get the payment.
Right. So that's what he's saying here, is that here too, where the ger died before you hit her, right, then she gets the payment. And the Gemara is going to bring a kasha from a case of a grusha, exactly, which we had seen before.
And there's another case where the husband gets it in the instance where he divorced her?
I don't think there's necessarily a case. Meaning,
There was a case, Baal, the one who was boil her.
Well, if he was zocha already before he divorced her, then he would keep it, right?
No, there was no accident before he divorced her. The accident took place after he divorced her. And I think the limud is the baal gets the money,
right.
The boel gets the money.
Yeah, so I think there's a machlokas about that, yeah. And the Gemara did have a limud. Kasher yashir alav baal ha'isha, every darshan, the boel gets it.
Right.
I think that's very funny. Yeah, Rashi says, baal ha'isha, a boel hekbit. But so that's according to Rabbah, in such a case, the woman would get the payment herself. Amar Rav Chisda, Maridiki. So he's bothered by the statement of Rabbah. He's bothered, how could Rabbah make such a statement? Atu Vlados Tshari Ninu Vizachimihu. Do you think that Vlados are considered like Tshari, that they're considered like bags of money where you could just be Zocha in the money right away and the woman would get the payment? No, that can't be. Ela Ise Labal Zika Le Rachmana, Le Ise Labal Lo. Rather, the halachos in this case are that if the Baal is still alive, then the Torah grants the payment to the Baal. But if the Baal is no longer alive, then the Torah doesn't grant the payment to the Baal. The Torah doesn't grant the payment to anybody, and the injurer would just get off the hook completely. So machlokes Rabba and Rav Chisda, what happens if you injure such a woman after her husband dies? According to Rabba, the woman gets the payment. According to Rav Chisda, you're completely potter. So now the Gemara is going to bring a kasha on Rabba. Mesivet. Hika sa'isha v'yatsu yilatea. If you injure a woman and her vlados come out, no te nezek v'tzar le'isha. You have to pay the nezek payment and the tzar payment for the direct injury and for the pain to the woman. Udmei vlados the baal. And you pay the value of the vlados to the husband. Eina baal, no te liyorshav. If the husband is no longer alive, you pay it to his heirs. Eina isha, no te liyorshav. And if the woman is no longer alive, then you pay her payments to her heirs. Haita shivcha v'nishtachara o giores zacha. And if the woman was a maidservant and she became freed, or she converted, then zacha. And the Gemara is assuming that zacha here means the person who injured is zocha, and the payment he no longer has to pay. So this is a kasha on Rabbah. Why would Rabbah say that if the husband's died, the woman gets the payment, and sounds like if the husband is dead, then you get off the hook? So answers the Gemara to defend Rabbah from this kasha. Amri umi adifa mimasnisin do kimna shechava babachaye hager umeis hager. Is this meisave any different from the Mishnah, which we established? We said that in the Mishnah where you're potter, that's referring to a case where you injured the woman in the life of the husband, and then the husband died. And since you were supposed to pay the ger, but now he's dead, so kol akodem bazachaba, whoever grabs onto the payment right away first gets it. And since you never paid it, you're zocha in it. But so this Meisave is no better than the Mishnah. The Mishnah we establish as a case where you injure the woman in the life of the ger and then he dies. So hachanami shechava babachai ager umeis hager. Here too, where the Braisa says that your zocha in the payment, if she was a shivcha or gioras, is referring to a case where you injure her in the life of a ger, and then the ger dies, and that's why you get off the hook. V'iba yiseima, alternatively, you can answer this Meisave and say that it's la'achar mitas hager. Really, it's after the convert died. V'tani zachta. Rather than saying zacha, which sounds like the person who injured is zocha in the payment, really you should say zachta, that in the female, that the woman is zocha in the payment. So in order to make this conform with Rabbah's opinion, we're just modifying it slightly from zacha to zachta, and thus it follows that if you injure the woman after her husband dies, then she actually is zocha in the payment, exactly like Rabbah had said. So it says the Gemara, lema ketanai. Maybe this machlokas Rabbah and Rav Chisda is really the following machlokas tanai, because the Gemara says as follows. Bas Yisrael sheniseis leger. If a Jew marries a convert, v'nis abra mimenu, and becomes pregnant from him, v'chava ba b'chaye hager, and you injure this pregnant woman while the ger, while her husband is still alive, no tain d'mei vlados l'ger. Then it's clear you have to pay the d'mei vlados to her husband, the convert. La'achar mitas hager, after the convert dies, if you injure her at that point, so tani chada chaya, v'tani chada pater. So one b'risa says that you're obligated, and one b'risa says that you're exempt. So my love t'nain in who? Isn't this exactly the machlokas between Rabbah and Rav Chisda? That the Tani Chada, the Braisa, which says that your Chayav seems to assume, like Rabbah, that if the ger is dead, you have to pay directly to the woman. And the Braisa, which says Pater, seems to assume exactly like Rav Chisda, that if the husband is dead, you have to pay, you get off the hook, and you don't have to pay at all. So answers the Gemara, the Rabbah Vadeit Nahi. According to Rabbah, you definitely have to say that it's a machlokas, because there's no way for Rabbah, who said that you'd be chayiv in such a case, to explain the Braisa, which says pater. Right? Rabbah clearly held that if you injure the woman after the ger dies, you have to pay her. And so this Braisa, which says that you don't have to pay at all, clearly disagrees, and it's a machlokas. Ela Rav Chisda milema t'nai. But according to Rav Chisda, who said that you'd be pater, do we have to say that it's a machlokas t'nai? Or could we just say that the Braisa, which says your Pater, accords with Rav Chisda? It's exactly the same. Rav Chisda said Pater, the Braisa says Pater, great. And the Braisa, which says Chayav, which seems to disagree with Rav Chisda, perhaps could be explained in another way, where it's not really a Machlokas Tanai. So it answers Gemara, lo kasha, ha rabbanan, ha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It's not really a machlokas tanaim at all. Really, it's just referring to two different tanaim in the Mishnah, but it all accords with Rav Chisda. Why? Because Rav Chisda would say that here we're discussing a case of shvach vlados, and the Braisa, which says your chayev, is assuming like Rabbi Shimon, who said that the woman, we had said that according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the woman splits the shvach vlados. So when we say chayev, we're not saying that you have to pay the dmei vlados to the isha. What we're really referring to is the shvach vlados. And the shvach vlados, we always assumed, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that the woman got a portion of. So in this case, since the woman is still alive, obviously you would still have to pay her. And the brisa, which says that your pater, is like the rabbanan, because the rabbanan said you never have to pay any of the shvach vlados to the isha. It all goes to the baal. And since the baal is no longer alive, then you would be pater, you'd be completely exempt. So it all works out according to Rav Chisda. The machlokas rabban Rav Chisda was only said by dmei vlados. These brises, which are arguing about shvach vlados. And according to Rav Chisda, shvach vlados are going to go to the isha. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, he never would have said pater in such a case. So ask the Gemara, I Rav Shimon Gamliel, my iria la'achar misa, afilu mechayim nami isle palga. If one of the brisa which says chayav, is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, then why is that brisa specifically discussing a case of after the husband died? Even if the husband is still alive, the woman would also get half of the dmei vlados. So why do we need to discuss la'achar misa? So answers the Gemara, mechayim is la'palga, la'achar misa kule. In Achanami, it's true that even before the husband dies, the woman would get some of the money. But the reason the brisa was discussing a case of after the husband died is because when the husband is still alive, the woman only gets half, but after the husband dies, the woman gets all of the shvach vlados. So the brisa was specifically taught as a case of after the husband dies in order to just communicate this point that after the husband dies, if you injure the woman, she would collect all of the shvach vlados. So that's one resolution to this machlokas, these two brisas, one which says chayav and one which says patur. V'ibayisema ha'vahar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. If you want, alternatively, you could say that really both brisas are Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It's not one Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and one Tanakama. And the difference between the two brisas is kan b'shvach vlados and kan b'dmei vlados. When the brisa said that you're chayav, that was discussing shvach vlados, which according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel are split between the husband and the wife, and that's why you would have to make the payment to the wife. And the brisa, which said that your pater, is discussing dmei vlados, which even Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you would not have to pay, according to Rabbah. You would not have to pay, here we're within Rav Chisda, you would not have to pay to the woman, and that's why the Braisa says pater. But ask the Gemara, Amri, Mishpach Vlados, Lishma Dmei Vlados, and we know Rav Gamliel, Lishma Lerabanan. We're making all these ukimtas about Rav Gamliel and Shvach Vlados, but we should just be able to extrapolate from one case to another. If it's true that you would have to pay Shvach Vlados to the woman, then it should follow that if the husband is dead, you should also have to pay the dmei vlados. Because what's the difference between shvach vlados and dmei vlados? At the end of the day, the woman has the right to collect. At the end of the day, the husband is dead. So you should just pay the dmei vlados to the husband, to the woman as well. And also, from Rav Shimon Gamliel, we should infer to the opinion of the Rabbanan. If Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that the woman splits the dmei vlados when the husband is alive and collects all of it when the husband is dead, then according to the Rabbanan, the dinim should be different. When the husband is dead, the woman should also collect, even according to the Rabbanan. So says the Gemara, Amri, lo. They totally reject that. Shvach vlados, the shaycha yada begavayhu, zachya behu bekulu. Shvach vlados, which her hand has a grasp on, which she has a right to while the husband is alive, even if only partially, when the husband dies, she's zocha in all of the shvach vlados. But dmei vlados, the lo shaycha yada begavayhu, lo zachya behu klal. Dmei vlados, which nobody says she collects when the husband is still alive, then when the husband dies, she also doesn't get a chelik. So this suggestion that we could infer from shvach vlados to dmei vlados and from Rav Shimon Gamliel to Rabbanan is totally crazy. It's not parallel. Just because she's zocha in something which she has a right to, even when the husband is alive, that she can then be zocha after the husband dies, does not mean we have to infer or should infer to other things where she does not have a chelek nechayim. So that's how we resolve this steer between the brisas. And ultimately, it's a machlokas between Rabbah and Rav Chisda, whether the woman receives payment after the husband dies. According to Rabbah, yes. According to Rav Chisda, no. So now the Gemara is going to go on to discuss various cases of machzik v'nechse hager. Rav Yehuda Saba asked the following question from Rav Nachman. Hamachzik b'shtarosav shel ger, mahu. Let's say somebody grabs onto, takes hold of the documents, the shtaros of a convert. What's the din? Man demachzik b'shtara adaita da'arehu demachzik. Do we say that one who's trying to grab on to the shtaros, to the documents of a convert, or of anybody really, is really trying to grab on to the land, meaning the document is a deed, a title over the land. So when you grab onto the document, what you really want to do is take ownership of the land. So do we say that you're trying to take ownership of the land? Uva'ara halo achzik. But physically, when we look at it, you're not doing anything to the land. You're not making a kinyan chazaka on the land. Veshtara nami lo kana. Delav daita ashtara. And therefore, we also say that you're not kona the shtar either, because your intent is not really to be kona the shtar. Your intent is to be kona the land. So do we say that what you tried to do is totally ineffective and you get nothing out of this? Again, just to say out, you tried to collect the shtar. Your intent was to therefore collect the land, but you didn't make a kinyan chazaka on the land, and therefore you're not kona anything because you also don't have kavana to collect the shtar. Odilma daita nami ashtara. Or do we say that really you have kavana to collect the shtar as well, and therefore it works and you do collect at least the shtar? So Amar Le, Rav Nachman answers to Rav Yehuda Saba, Animori, v'chilatzer al pitz lochisu humtzarech? He says, answer me, I don't understand what you're asking. Does he need this document to put on top of his flask? Right? The Gemara has this expression, latzer al pitz lochisu humtzarech. Basically saying, yeah, do you want to use the document as a stopper for your flask? You're just going to roll up the document and put it in the top of the flask and it'll stop up the flask? No, so obviously this person doesn't actually need the shtar. Rashi says, v'chilatzer al pitz luchiso, delehavi daite ashtara meikara. Does he need to use this document as a stopper for the flask, such that he would have kavana to be zocha in the shtar? So no, it's obvious that he was really only trying to be zocha in the karka, al yedei the shtar, and since he never made a chazaka on the karka, he also hasn't made a kenyan on the shtar. But answers Rav Yehuda Saba, Amar Leh, Lutzer v'Lutzer. No, maybe he actually does need the shtar as a stopper for his flask. In which case, maybe he really does have das to be kona the shtar, and thus my question is not a question. It sounds like maybe there's a machlokas here, whether you actually need the document to stop up your flask, and then there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nachman, what to do in such a case. Machzik b'shtarosav shel ger. Now, Amar Abba, mashkono shel Yisrael b'yad ger, umeis hager. Let's say a Jew has an object which is being used as collateral in the hands of a ger, and then that ger dies, uva Yisrael acher v'hichzik bo, and another Yisrael, another Jew comes and is machzik in the collateral, in the mashkon of the Jew, which was in the hands of the ger. So we say, motzien oto miyado, we take the mashkon away, we take the collateral away from the second Jew, because really it belonged to the first Jew. The ger was only holding onto it as collateral, but when he dies, you can't just be kone like the rest of his property. It's not really considered his. It's really considered like the original Yisrael. So my taima, says the Gemara, why is it that we take it away from the second Yisrael who is kone? Kevan de misle ger, paka le shibude. Since the ger died, the control that he had over this mashkon is considered destroyed. It's gone. And thus, the mashkon just returns back to the original owner. It returns back to the Yisrael who gave this mashkon to the ger. And let's say we have the opposite case, mashkono shel ger b'yad Yisrael. Let's say we have the collateral of a convert in the hands of the Jew, umeis hager, and then the ger dies. So now it really was the mashkon.
So what happens to the debt? Wouldn't Bezdin maybe collect it?
Would Bezdin collect the debt? Because Bezdin is like the yorshim of a ger. Yeah.
Is it possible that he gets off scot-free? He doesn't have to pay anything?
I think both are possible. Nobody on the daf here addresses it. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it would go to Bezdin, Papas, just like what you're saying. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Okay, fine. So back to the opposite case. Here you have the collateral of a Jew in the hands of Yisrael, umeis hager, and now the ger dies. Uva Yisrael acher v'hichzik bo, and another Jew comes and is machzik in this collateral of a ger, which is in the property of, which is in the hands of the Jew. Zeh kana kenege ma'osav, v'zeh kana es hashar. We assume in such a case, the Yisrael who had the debt outstanding, who had loaned to the ger, and was holding on to his collateral, he is zocheh in the collateral, keneged whatever he loaned to the ger. Meaning, let's say a person lent $100 to a ger, and a ger, the ger gave you collateral for it, but now the ger dies, so you're never going to collect payment from that $100. So we say, you're going to be kona in the collateral that he gave you, connected to $100, and that way you'll technically receive payment for the loan that you made. And the other Yisrael, who is machzik in this pikadon, who is machzik in this collateral of the ger, is kona the rest of it.
Why don't you say that the holder of the mashkin gets it all because he was the first one to have it.
So that's Gemara's next question. Va'amai tikni lechatzera. Why don't we say that the holder of the collateral, the first Jew who loaned to the ger, is kona the entire mashkon because it's in his chatzer? Why isn't his chatzer kona for him? Da'am Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina, chatzero shel adam kona lo shelo midaito. We have a principle from Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina that a person's chatzer can be kona, that a person can acquire something, and not just with the person's das, with the person's knowledge, but even shalomi daiso, even without the person knowing, his chatzer could be kona for him. So what you could say is, in this case, the Jew is holding on to the collateral of the ger, and the ger dies. Maybe the Jew doesn't know about it, but his chatzer should be kona for him immediately, right away, when the ger dies, and there's nobody to inherit the property of the ger. So says the Gemara, Amri hacha b'mayaskinon d'leisei. Here we're dealing with the case where the owner of the chatzer, the person who's holding on to the collateral, is not around. Right? Look in Rashi, d'leisei she'en hamalve b'ir, where the creditor is not in the city at the time that the ger dies. And the Gemara explains, kol hecha de'isa l'didei, de'ibayi makne matzi kani, kani le'nami chatzera. Any case where a person is around, he's in the city, in which case he could be kona himself, then his chatzer will be kona for him. But kol hecha de'leisei l'didei, de'ibayihu l'mikne lo matzi kani, chatzero nami lo kanya. But any case where a person is not around, where if he wanted to be kona, he would not be able to be kona because he's not here, then his courtyard cannot be kona for him either. So in a chanami, in a general case, maybe the person's chatzer could be kona for him. And like Moshe was suggesting, the person who was holding on to the collateral would be kona all of it. But since he's not around, his chatzer can also not be kona for him. And that's why the second Jew who was machzik in the collateral of the ger would be kona keneged the rest of the money. And the Gemara then just says, what? Well, The Gemara then adjusts the case slightly and says what it must be is that the case is a case where the collateral was not even in the chatzer of the Jew, of the creditor, in which case he can't be kona, right? Rashi, b'deleisei lemashkon b'chatzero shel malve. Here we're changing the case. It's not really that the person, the creditor, was out of the city. It's rather that the collateral that the ger gave him was not in his chatzer, b'shas mitas hager, at the time when the ger died. Aval isei lemashkon b'chatzero, kani lechatzero. But if the collateral was in this person's courtyard at the time that the ger died, then his chatzer could be kona for him. So I guess we can continue on with the Mishnah if you guys want. So the Mishnah says, "Hachofer bor b'rishus hayachin u'paschol rishus harabin." Let's say a person digs a bor within his own property in a rishus hayachin, but the opening to the bor extends outward into the rishus harabin. Oh, b'rishus harabin u'paschol rishus hayachin, or the actual bor is standing in the rishus harabin, but the opening to the bor is in the rishus hayachin. Alternatively, b'rishus hayachin u'paschol rishus hayachin acher, or if it's the bor is in one rishus hayachid, but the entrance to the bor, the opening to the bor, is in another rishus hayachid. In all of these cases, you'd be chayav. We assume that all of these cases are cases where you're obligated for the damage of the bor. And Rashi just says, "Uvavadim hifki rishuso ota shepia bor letocha." As long as the person who has possession of the opening of the bor was mafkir his rishus, otherwise the person would not be chayav. So the Gemara has a related machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva about these various cases of bor. Tana Rabbanan, hachofer bor b'rishus hayachid u'paschol rishus harabim chayav. If a person digs a bor in a rishus hayachid in his own property and opens it out, the opening to the bor is in the rishus harabim, that is chayav. A person is obligated for the damages of the pit in such a case. V'zehu bor ha'amr b'torah divrei Rabbi Shmuel. And that's the case of a bor that's discussed in the Torah according to Rabbi Shmuel, right? And it's very logical. You have a bor which is in your property, so it's yours, but the opening is in the rishus harabim, so people can easily fall into it. It makes sense why you should be obligated in such a case. Rabbi Akiva omer, hifkir reshuso velo hifkir boro, zehu bor ha'amr batorah. Rabbi Akiva says, the real case of a bor that you're going to be chayav on in the Dinei HaTorah is a case where you were mafkir your entire rishus, but you were not mafkir your bor. So you have your own property, you have a bor inside of it, then you basically declare the rest of the property ownerless so people can come around and be in that property, but you were not mafkir your bor, so you still have ownership for it. That's going to be the case where the Torah is mechayev you for the damages of the bor. Should we keep going? He doesn't stop there.
There you go.
So Amar Rabba, the bor b'rishus harabim kule alma lo pligi de mechayev. Says Rabbah, if you're dealing with the board in the Rishos HaRabim, everybody agrees that you'd be chayv in such a case. My taima, Amar Kra, ki yiftach b'chi yichre. The pasuk discusses two different types of bor. It discusses when you open a bor completely, or when you dig the bor. So says Gemara, im al psicha chayav al kriya lo kol shekein. If you're obligated just for opening the covering or the entrance to the bor, then obviously you're going to be chayav for digging the entire bor. So why does the Torah use both of these lashonos, ki yiftach and ki yichre? Once I know that you're obligated just for opening, it's obvious that you're obligated for digging as well. Ella shall iske p'ticha val iske kriya b'ala. Rather, what the Torah is discussing is a bor which came to be, either because of your opening or because of your digging. In either of these cases, you would be obligated for the damages of the bor. Lo nechliku ella b'bor birshuso. The machlokas of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel is really only about a bor in your property. Rabbi Akiva savor bor birshuso nami chayev, tichtiv baal habor, b'bor de islei bailin kamar achmana. Rabbi Akiva assumes that you could even be chayev for a bor in your rishus, because the pasuk says, baal habor, the owner of the bor has to pay for the damages of the bor. Clearly it's discussing a bor which has owners, which has bailin. So the Torah, when it refers to the damages of the bor, could even be discussing a bor birshuso, a bor in your property. Rabbi Shmuel savar baal hatakala. Rabbi Shmuel thinks when the Torah says baal habor, that the baal habor has to pay, that's discussing when you own the damage, you own, I guess, the trap that's laid by the bor. You own the potential for the damages. But when you have a bor that's in your own rishus, it's not considered a takala, it's not considered a stumbling block for other people, because it's in your rishus. So what are they doing in your rishus anyway? And therefore, you're not going to be chayav. Elamai zehu bor ha'amar b'torah dekamar b'kiva, zehu bor shepatach ba'akatov tchila litashlum. What is the bor that Rabbi Akiva refers to when he says zehu bor ha'amar b'torah? He means this is the first bor that's discussed in the Torah when it comes to payment, when it comes to being obligated for the damages of the bor. And the Gemara will then continue on to elaborate this machlok.
What was the reasoning behind the person who was the owner?